on this beautiful Saturday morning. We're joined with Nancy, who wants to talk about her mesquite tree. Welcome to the program. How may we help you?
Well, first of all, I want to say kudos to Barbara. And now to you. I've got to say I'm honored to actually be speaking with you. Rosie and Jennifer have been great to get me to you. And the subject is my 30-year-old healthy and really beautiful mesquite tree. The roots are very strong, and they're starting to lift up the 35 yards of flagstone hardscaping that is my patio. And in addition to that, some of the roots are pushing out cemented stones from the stone border along the actual garden. So, and also the tree leans rather far to one side with heavy branches touching into the stucco fence where I've noticed cracks. So this is my dilemma, and I'm very emotional about it. I don't know whether to cut down this gorgeous tree or to try to just fix this situation. Someone told me I could just cut the roots.
Yeah, I saw the photos that you sent through earlier this week, Nancy, and we the options are there's several. You can remove the tree and grind the stump out and then do the repair work on the flagstone. There are, you know, or you could live with that. A lot of people have pavers and stonework that's been lifted, but they love their trees and they keep them and they live with the undulating brickwork or pavers just because they're willing to kind of live with a small trip hazard like that, or because they just can't bear the thought of having to take the tree out. You can dig down occasionally and do some root pruning, but you have to be pretty careful, of course. The closer you are to the trunk of the tree, the base of the tree, the more difficult it is, because you're removing large roots that not only have some absorption capacity, but they also are stabilizing the tree. So if you start making large cuts on roots very close to the tree, there's a risk of destabilizing the tree or causing it to decline or possibly die. There are, if you're far enough away from the tree, sometimes you can cut the roots and then install a root barrier, which is usually a plastic type material that is put down into the trench. You trench along and cut the roots at a predetermined location, and then you put this barrier in 2 or 3 feet deep along the trench, and that deflects the roots. So any roots that grow from that point on will hit that barrier, and they won't go beyond it. So you can protect a hardscape or a fence beyond a root barrier. We have installed many, many root barriers over the years, and they're very, very successful. You just have to have the right distance from the tree to make sure that it doesn't harm the tree when you make those large cuts.
And you had said,
how far away are you talking about in making a large cut?
Well, if you're only cutting on one side of the tree and you're only trenching, on one side of a tree, you can be pretty close. Normally, they indicate 1 foot of distance from the tree for every 1 inch of trunk diameter measured at about chest height. So at about 4 or 5 feet off the ground, if the tree is 20 inches in diameter, you should avoid any damage to the roots within 20 feet of the tree. So you can see that you've got to have a long ways away. And at that point, outside that 20-foot radius, the roots are so small that it's inconsequential in terms of the health of the tree.
It can still recover.
That being said, a lot of work has been done inside that what we call the critical root zone, the CRZ. A lot of work has been done inside that 20-foot radius on single sides of a tree with no known harm to the tree, because you're only cutting on one. If you did that same amount of work on 3 or 4 sides of a tree, of course, working inside that CRZ could really be harmful to the tree. But if you're only working on one side, like yours, Nancy, you have the fence on the one side. And how far is it from the tree to that fence, by the way? I couldn't tell from the picture.
It's about 3 feet.
Oh, gosh, it is really close. I was hoping it was more like 6 or 8. But the fence was beyond the tree in the photo, and I really couldn't tell the distance. 3 feet away, that's almost impossible to get in there and use a trencher and cut along that fence. With a tree planted that close to that wall, I'm afraid that that option really isn't there to try to put a root barrier in such a close distance. You could try it. You could get in there and just go for it, but there would be a risk of destabilizing the tree. But if it's a matter of saving the wall, that may be your only option. And if the tree failed, then you would have had to take the tree out anyway.
And depending on what's on the other side of that wall, instead of cut, is it a neighbor's house or if it's open to the alley or something open, if it's not hurting anything on the other side, we can always unstack that wall, just put a lintel over it and restack it, and you'll have a gap between the wall base and the ground that you can put, you know, chicken wire or whatever to keep animals from passing through. But
right,
you know, you could just restructure that wall so it's re-leveled and
right.
You
can take that
zone alone.
Take that one section of wall out, and then as Romy said, put a lintel or a beam across the pilasters, and then build the wall on top of that beam, and leave a gap there for the roots to grow underneath, and that's been done successfully as well.
Well, we appreciate the call. Hope that helps, and good luck saving the mesquite tree. That is hard losing a nice huge shade tree that
I know
already got a little bit of a
We actually got permission from our neighbor, and we built the wall into his yard, 6 feet into his yard. So we had to get an exception on our title on our property to actually build into his wall, because he wanted to keep the tree too, but it was destroying our wall. So we took it out and actually built a little section out into the neighbor's property. Now we both enjoy the shade of that tree. There are options, but you have to get cooperation of the other neighbors across the way.
Let's see how we can help Dave, who wants to talk about selecting a tree from Mesa. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much. So our home faces south, and along the walkway, we're wanting to plant a tree, but it can't be a really huge tree. So in terms of size, we're thinking like a purple plum, only not that color, something green, and it's planted on rock, so something that isn't dropping leaves year-round. So reasonably compact and green leaf color. Any ideas?
Yeah, the green leafed colors are, you know, are you looking for a fruit tree, something that's going to give you a little bit of...
You know, I don't necessarily think fruit tree. It's kind of in a little bit like in a corner, so the heat is pretty intense in the summer because it doesn't have a lot of air movement.
Well, I'm thinking something like a desert orchid or even a cascalote might be nice. You've got those are really nice and green in color. Even the pomegranate that we talked about just now.
I was listening to the show and I pulled that picture up, and that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, and they're just...
What was the second one that you mentioned?
What did I just say?
I couldn't spell.
Oh, no, it's a cascalote. It's a cascalote. It's cascalote. Cascalote.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, they're quite a nice tree. Even there's two varieties that we like. It's a Cecilpinia cacalaco, which is that cascalote, and the Cecilpinia mexicana, which is a Mexican bird of paradise. They both grow, you know, that would be a third one I would add to that list. That Mexican bird of paradise has a nice dark green leaf. And again, it's in that kind of a 10 to 15 foot height range, which is just perfect for a small location. Again, a great resource for you would be a website, amwua.org, amwua.org. That's the Arizona Municipal Water Users Association website, and look up their landscape trees, and they've got some color photos of a bunch of really great trees in that height range.
Wonderful.
We appreciate the call, Dave. Good luck with your tree selection and planting. If you are putting in a new tree like Dave is, and you've got to get water to it, are you drip or other... What's your preferred irrigation option?
Well, I prefer using bubblers because you really can't improve on flood irrigation. It mimics nature better than any other type of watering. You do have to contain the flood irrigation by creating a berm, but that's not very difficult to do. You know, whether it's at a 3-foot radius or a 6-foot radius or a 10 or 12 foot radius, you can create a berm so that the water, when it flows out of the bubbler, will flood the ground, you know, over the root zone of the tree and slightly beyond it is ideal, so that it will encourage root development out into the native soil. But yeah, that's really my preferred method of irrigation is using bubblers. You can accomplish the same thing with a drip irrigation system, but you have to really, like I said earlier in the program, you got to really get it dialed in. And the secret is to allow those stations to run as long as you can, so you get a very deep saturation, and then don't water as often. You know, the idea of watering for 5 minutes a day every day is a terrible method of delivering water, because it just creates a very shallow saturation and it's just not as effective. So, and you want the soil between your emitters also to be saturated, not just these little spots. You want your irrigation saturation patterns to coalesce. They need to touch one another. So you need to run the water long enough so that the horizontal saturation of the water actually touches the horizontal saturation pattern of the emitter nearby. So you're getting a nice coverage of water. So if you can do that and you can do it well, drip can be a more economical way to deliver that water, but you got to do it well.
All right. And it's funny, you can ask a lot of people and that opinion varies quite widely.
Yeah. Well, I just don't think you can improve on flood irrigation. If you can, if you've got trees, that's really the best way. Shrubs, it's a lot easier to use drip, of course, because their root systems are so much smaller.
Well, let's bring your guest Barbara back on the line from Tucson. I'm not even going to say the name of the organization. I heard it's pronounced twice, and I still couldn't get it.
I think it's Ishkashita. Is that right, Barbara?
That's correct. Just how it's spelled.
Yes, and can you tell us, you know, if people wanted to get a hold of you, where would they, is there a website that they could contact you just to reach out to find out about the gleaning program in Tucson and how they might be able to register if they've got some fruit in their backyard and would like to donate it?
We have an online registration at www.iskashita.org. That's ISKASHITAA. Or if you can't remember that, you can do a redirect, which is harvesttucson.org. Leads you to the same site. You go to donate, and you go, but it's not, you're not committed to donating. Letting us know that you have a tree, and maybe you'll have donations 5 years down the road.
Sure. I'm sure if they even Google Tucson Gleaning, they'll probably find your Ishkashita website.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're on all social media as well and very active, providing recipes and information about what we are gleaning. We glean twice a week, every Wednesday and every Friday, starting at 9 a.m.
So you could use some volunteers to come help do some of that gleaning?
Yes, we could use volunteers on those days, and we're just starting a program where we're teaching community members to be our fruit spies. So especially with the lesser known and smaller trees, such as jujube, even pomegranate. People don't know that they're edible or don't use them. We want people to take the pomegranate pledge and stop food waste by making us aware of what's out there.
Well, Barbara, thank you again for your time.